This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this latest Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name is Andrew Aldridge. The purpose of these podcasts is bring to life the people and the investments behind what Deepbridge does. To that end, I'm delighted today to be joined by Simon Thirlwall-Jones, who is a fund manager and head of tech at Deepbridge Capital. So Simon, thank you very much for joining us. Great to see you.
Pleasure, Andrew.
Great to see you. So with these podcasts, we always like to start at the beginning. It's a good place to start. So could you give us a little bit of an overview of your background prior to joining Deepbridge?
Yeah, so I'm a chartered accountant. I trained with PwC and then went straight into their corporate finance team. After a few years there, I went into industry and ended up as head of global corporate M&A for a large 2 billion turnover PLC.
Okay.
First foray into VC was in 2000. And in fact, my first ever investment was a hard tech investment.
So not .com then?
No, I just missed the .com. Good. Actually, just missed that. So, so went into VC in 2000, really started investing in software companies around about 2005, sat on the boards of a number of different companies addressing different problems in different markets, saw, to be honest, the good, the bad and the ugly, which has sort of then framed my investment thesis over time.
Absolutely.
So, I've also, along the way, had my own businesses. I founded a niche consultancy advising VCs and family offices.
Okay.
Done a number of turnarounds for clients. I've also bought and sold a few businesses. And then my last role before joining Deepbridge, I was the head of technology ventures for the Development Bank of Wales, one of the most active VCs by volume, actually in the UK, in the tech space. And I was fortunate that in my time there, we invested in 81 companies with a total deal value of 100 million.
Was that predominantly Cardiff and South Wales based, or was it across Wales? Or
It was predominantly across South Wales. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's obviously the economic engine of Wales down there. We did have an office, the bank's headquarters actually, based in Wrexham.
Okay.
And we had a couple of members of the team up here, and they did a number of deals sort of along the A55 corridor.
Sure.
And we brought in a number of companies. So we brought in one fintech from Barcelona.
Okay.
That did become headquartered in Cardiff. Sort of mainly.
I was going to say, I went to university in Aberystwyth, and you wouldn't be bringing a business in Barcelona and putting them in up. I can tell you that for free. So you obviously joined Deepbridge in summer 2022, and we're delighted to have you on board. Can you just tell people just a little bit about your role and kind of what you do at Deepbridge and kind of what being head of tech, being fund manager head of tech actually means?
Yeah, sure. So over time, we've invested between our SEIS product and our EIS product about 120 million in tech companies. We've currently got a portfolio of about 40 active tech companies. There are all sorts of different life cycle stages. So some of the early SEIS investments are just starting to grow. Some of them, which have been in our portfolio for significant periods of time, you know, they've got up to substantial multi-million pound revenues. So complete spectrum
complete
of life cycle stages. And then also it's a really broad church in terms of the technology. So we've got fintech businesses, we've got a number of hard tech businesses. A lot of businesses use AI and machine learning as the sort of underlying technology to address the problems. It's a very, very broad range of tech.
I was going to say even with something like machine learning, you know, the subsectors that it crosses over is so diverse in terms of kind of the exposure that they've got, I guess, to different subsectors. So in terms of kind of your kind of initial impressions and kind of where you've got to with kind of looking at the tech portfolio here at Deepbridge and what are your takeaways so far?
I think we've got a lot of really interesting companies. I think a number of them have got really strong value propositions, and those are the ones that you can see growing quite rapidly. Inevitably, there are some with challenges, and we need to work hard to help them reshape their messaging so that their value proposition becomes stronger and they can go on and grow.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, very favourable, actually. Very favourable.
I was asked somebody recently, they said, well, you talk about your hands-on investment management style at DeepBridge, and what does that mean? And kind of, and I said, well, it depends on where the company's up to and what they need, et cetera. I said, but in some cases, it can be multiple times in a day you're speaking to them if they've got a particular challenge they're looking at or a particular deal they're trying to do. So it's kind of that reactive kind of approach in terms of you go where you need it, I guess, in terms of where that resource needs to be positioned.
Yeah, I mean, we could be helping companies to find the right set of advisors mm-hmm. to help them exit.
Yeah.
We could be helping them to find, you know, if it's a business which wants to scale quite significantly, helping them with recruitment.
Yep.
So we've got a number of partners who will provide, you know, almost a complete end-to-end outsourced recruitment yep. process. If you want to hire 20 engineers into your software team,
it's a very specialist thing that they yep. need some input on.
You know, it could be as simple as, you know, just bouncing stuff off us. Could be a legal yeah. problem that they need sorting out. You know, it really is very, yeah. very varied in terms of the support and the degree of touch that we have with some of these companies.
Yeah. So. There's somewhere we've, you know, basically the basics, as far as me as a marketeer goes, you know, we've helped them with their logo and things like that, just that kind of initial stage to get them kind of moving, have that visual kind of impression. But so kind of it. Looking at companies that we've got, and also from your long, illustrious career, you know, what kind of qualities do you like to see in early stage companies? You know, what are you looking for if you're looking at a company? What kind of ticks the boxes?
Well, I think the most important thing, and I've kind of alluded to that a little bit, is the value proposition. Yep. It has to be incredibly compelling for customers if mm-hmm. you're going to scale. So, you know, as an example, we've got one company in our portfolio that will reduce the processing time for their customers from 10 man days to 10 minutes.
Yep.
You know, and that is the kind of of scale of change that you really need to
disrupt a market.
To disrupt, and, yeah. You know, to make it, as I say, a no-brainer for your customers to take on that offering.
Yep.
So that's the first thing.
Yep.
The second thing is, you know, obviously, engaged, experienced, highly motivated management teams.
Yep.
That's very important. The companies need to be addressing large markets.
Yep.
You know, we're not going to get necessarily extremely large market shares of large markets, but we need to be able to be operating in large and growing markets.
Well, you'd rather have a small percentage of a large market than a massive percentage of a small market.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yep. The other thing is evidence of shortening or short sales cycles
yep.
and what's referred to broadly as frictionless onboarding. So if mm-hmm. you can imagine, you know, you approach somebody, if it takes 2 years to make the sale and then 6 to 12 months to onboard them as a customer,
yep.
that's a very painful process in terms yep. of scaling.
And also cash flow in that time. As
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and also cash flow. But whereas if it takes 3 months to win a client and then 5 minutes to onboard them, yep. you know, that business will scale much more rapidly than the first example yep. that I gave. So that's important.
Absolutely.
And then it's a case of us buying in at the right price in terms mm-hmm. of valuations, and then believing that the exit landscape in 3, 5, 7 years, depending on the precise times in the company's evolution that we get in,
yep.
that we believe that the market will be there for an exit.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I guess it's. I mean, that's crucial. From day one, we've got to understand where an exit is yeah. likely to come from. Obviously, you can't have a defined exit, but understanding the kind of route that they'll take to that exit is crucial, because I guess that depends. That will dictate sometimes how you build a business or some of the process and structure you have within a business. If it's going for, if you think it's going to be an IPO or a trade sale, it'll be dictated by what that looks like.
Yeah, and the other thing which we need to consider along the way is, you know, how many rounds of funding mm. is this company likely to need? You know, it's a well-trodden path to go seed, late seed, yep. Series A, Series B and beyond.
Yep.
And we need to make sure that when we're funding companies that they're given enough runway to get to that next value inflection point. So yep. if you're a company turning over £20,000-£30,000 worth of MRR, we need, yep. and you've got aspirations to do a Series A, we need to make sure that they go, that the revenue is going to grow to that 80K, to that £1 million magic
ticks the
ARR
boxes.
Mark.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess that's part of the, yeah, understanding where those co-funding opportunities might come from. Yeah, we obviously, I think back in 2021, I think for every pound of EIS money we brought into our invested companies, there was £2 came in from co-funding.
Right.
So I guess it's part of that cycle is understanding where those co-funding partners might be, the type of people that they will appeal to, because I guess, all investment managers have their niches and what they like and what they don't like. So it's understanding that, I guess.
Indeed.
So prior to joining DeepBridge, you'd known DeepBridge a while. You'd known a few of our investee companies through where you'd provided co-funding and worked with them, etc. Was that a driver for joining DeepBridge? Was it that you kind of felt comfortable with what we were doing and understood what we were doing?
I think yes, partly. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I've known you, Ray, and Ian for a while.
Yeah.
And when I sat down with Ian earlier this year, and he talked me through what he was trying to do with DeepBridge and his vision for the future, that sounded very exciting. Mm. So the opportunity to come on board and be part of that was a big factor in my decision to join.
Yeah, great. So what are you looking to achieve in the short, well, start with the short term and then the longer term kind of beyond that? What are the kind of next steps or what are your next objectives?
So obviously, being relatively new to the business, in the very short term, it's getting to know all of the companies, mm-hmm. Understanding their value proposition, understanding the strength of their management teams, and depending on which life cycle stage they're at, it's looking to drive either a partial or a full exit for investors in those companies where that is a realistic proposition.
Absolutely.
And there are a number in our portfolio.
Yep.
So that's the short term. Aim. Medium term, we obviously want to bring in new investments mm-hmm. into the portfolio.
Yep.
So evaluating.
We like new blood. That's always good.
Yep. So evaluating new opportunities and investing in new companies is certainly an aim. And then longer term, and this sort of plays back to Ian's vision from when we met for lunch back in the beginning of the summer, is to help DeepBridge to raise limited partner funds. So we've got that sort of breadth of, we can do the very early stage SEIS, we can do EIS, and then we can do follow-on funds when those companies are ready to take on Series A and Series B money. So that's the sort of longer term plan.
That's an exciting development. It's obviously at the moment, I'm just thinking, at the moment they haven't joined us yet, but when this broadcast, hopefully they will have joined us, but you're recruiting a new team to come in, with the tech team as well. So I think that would be kind of interesting, as I've called it, DeepBridge 2.0, expanding the investment team, making sure we've got people such as yourself on board that can help drive that next stage of growth.
Yeah, very much so.
That's good. I think, at the moment, everything in the world is about economic turmoil. Everything, all the news you see, it's all doom and gloom, etc. What does the market turmoil, the economic uncertainty, etc., what effect has that had on kind of early stage companies and kind of the VC world? Is there anything specific that you've noticed, or is it kind of business as usual?
I think it's a mixed picture. Mm-hmm. I think those of our companies that have these compelling value propositions are continuing to grow quite significantly, notwithstanding the economic conditions. I think inevitably we will see probably particularly enterprise scale customers taking longer to make decisions.
Sure.
As particularly if the economic outlook becomes more uncertain.
Yep.
I think the other thing is that we're going to have to be more realistic, or certainly see, we've seen valuations coming down. I was looking at some statistics the other day that was suggesting that, we're back to sort of 2014 levels in terms of SaaS metrics, from, almost half what they were from the high at the back end of 2020. So I think when companies are coming to fundraise, there will be some conversations around valuation there.
Yeah.
Those are all factors that will impact our companies during the current climate.
I guess the impact is probably not quite as high as if they were a larger firm doing bigger chunks of money. Is that fair, or is the kind of the valuation pressure kind of feeling all the way down the food chain?
I think it does cascade down the food chain. Yep. We've seen a lot of the quoted tech companies really come off in 2022, and that does affect the valuations which people are willing to pay to invest in private companies. So yeah, no, it does have an impact.
Interesting. And then kind of, I think it's kind of widely accepted. We probably are in a recession now, or a recession is coming. You've seen recessions come and go before. You know, what does that kind of landscape usually look like for early stage businesses, etc.? My kind of take on it is that you tend to see that early stage companies tend to do quite well out of recession, out of the growth phase afterwards. But kind of during the recession, before that growth stage, is what kind of impact does it have?
Well, I think it creates actually opportunity for investors. You know, if you can get into companies now at what will be more attractive valuations than we've seen historically, we could see a good vintage coming out of recession. I think I sort of alluded to it in a sense in the answer to the last question. You know, we will see customers potentially taking longer. Mm-hmm. We talking to our sort of peers within the industry, you know, a lot of people are funding their portfolio companies. Yep. They're not looking to make new investments necessarily. That could create some great opportunities if we've got access to capital. So, it as always, winners and losers.
Every challenge in some way represents an opportunity.
Indeed.
So within the kind of the wider tech theme, and kind of on a, I guess, a more positive note, what are the themes you're seeing in the tech world at the moment? Kind of, where are founders and entrepreneurs kind of starting out, and kind of where's money going, etc.?
Well, we're still seeing a lot of propositions where artificial intelligence and machine learning are at the sort of very core of what those companies do. Mm-hmm. We're seeing increasing opportunities in cybersecurity.
Okay.
We've got a space manufacturing business within our portfolio. Yep. That's a very interesting sector at the moment, the whole sort of space and where we're going in that regard. And then I guess the other thing which, in terms of emerging technologies, I think quantum computing is finally coming of age.
Yep.
We see a lot of mixed reality or XR, mm-hmm. augmented reality, virtual reality.
And some of these we've kind of heard as almost buzzwords for quite a while now, but the technology seems to be getting there and seems to be actually, AI, for example. Yeah, we've heard about AI for, 15, 20 years. People have talked about it, but actually seeing it working and being adopted has been quite a new thing. Is that fair? Is that a lot? We're still seeing some of those buzzwords around, but they're now starting to actually gain some traction. Is that fair?
I think they are gaining traction. I certainly don't perceive AI and ML now to be a buzzword.
No.
It's
part of it. Absolutely.
Cyber a little bit, quantum computing a little bit. But technology is evolving constantly. So, one of the challenges we have is forward scanning the technology landscape to identify new opportunities. So.
It was interesting. It was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I was on a panel session and the host threw a load of buzzwords at us and myself and the other panelists and said, which of these do you invest in? And my response is that we don't invest in buzzwords. It's got to be tech that's doing something for a fundamental commercial reason.
Absolutely.
Because there's got to be a commercial reality to it, not just because it's a buzzword. So interesting. So we talked about the short term and the longer term, etc. The teams building and we're establishing that now, etc. Where do you see in 12 months' time? Where do you see the kind of tech portfolio? How do you see it have progressed, or kind of what you're doing? You'll be 18 months in by then. So, where do you see things going?
Well, I hope we will have made a number of exits.
Excellent. That's what our listeners want to hear. That's good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, genuinely, I strongly believe we can see a number of exits.
Excellent.
Whether those are partial or full.
Yep.
I mean, there are certainly conversations going on at the moment around partial exits.
Yep.
I think we've got to be careful about taking our investors out
too early.
Yep. So I think, my view on that would be, let's get them a return and let's leave them with the ability to get some significant upside, having completely de-risked their investments.
Yep.
So I think exits will
happen. And I think historically a few people have looked at partial exit as dubiously, but I think when in that kind of format and that kind of structure, it absolutely makes sense. You know, why would you take all your money off the table when you can see some positive upside, particularly if you've got your money back and maybe some on that?
Yeah, I mean, I there are apocryphal stories of people getting out when businesses have listed at a £50 million valuation and then gone on to be unicorns, so they've 20x from there. So, you know, you need to be careful about when you exit entirely from a tech investment. So I think we'll hopefully see all of our companies funded. Mm-hmm. And increasingly, I'm hoping that we'll see third party. I think this is particularly relevant to the technology growth portfolio. We'll see third party funders alongside us in more of our companies.
Particularly because of the maturity of the portfolio, you've got a number of companies now which are of that stage where,
yes,
to be honest, we don't want to be continuing funding them now. We followed our money and it's now bigger chunks to come in.
Yeah. So, you know, and I would hope that we're in discussions with limited partners 18 months hence about, you know, that limited partner fund that we can deploy Series A, Series B capital into some of our earlier stage companies or our earlier investments.
And other companies as well. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. So on these podcasts, we like to bring people to life. So, yeah, away from the office, you know, you are in the office a lot. But, yeah, what are your interests away from work?
Family. Mm-hmm. You know, wife is a keen golfer, so I play golf.
Yep.
My daughter's in London.
Does that imply that you're not a keen golfer? You do it because she tells you? Is that how it works? Is that
I think my handicap would certainly suggest that I'm not a keen golfer. No, I do like playing golf, but my handicap is not great.
Yeah.
My daughter's in London. She's not very sporty. She's more artistic. So excellent. I love to go and get a sort of, you know, do the cultural stuff with her.
Nice.
My son is very sporty. He's actually in America. Was fortunate to get out to see him last summer. And he's back home shortly, so hopefully to spend some time with him. You know, he's a tennis player, so obviously tennis features in my life as well.
Yep.
And then just generally
he's a particularly good tennis player as well, to be fair, but yeah.
He's a lot better than me anyway. And he's a lot better than Ray.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I've heard.
And then just, you know, general fitness really, and then just spending time with friends, you know, meals and stuff. So
very good. So then the question we ask all of our guests on the Deep Reach Discovery podcast is, if you could invite three guests, dead or alive, and no friends or family, so we don't upset anybody, to the Deep Reach dinner party, who would be those guests and why?
Okay, well, I mean, that's a very difficult question, isn't it? But so I think the first person I would invite is James Anderson, who I think has recently retired from Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust.
Okay.
So, you know, fantastic track record, great run, you know, made $4 billion out of Tesla, one of the first funds to start to look at investing in private companies rather than just quoted ones, because they noticed that companies were going to market later.
But they did it properly as well, which...
You know, and great, great outlook in terms of... you know, trying to discover where technology trends are going by talking to market leaders, world-renowned universities. So it's a great, great model for investing in tech businesses. So he'd be the first person just to pick his brain.
Interesting,
Second person would be Winston Churchill.
Fascinating.
You know, I would really love to understand what it was like leading a nation through, you know, what was an incredibly difficult time during the Second World War, and just what insights on leadership generally he had.
And also, I think prior to that as well, you know, this is a guy that was born in the Victorian era, you know, even his life before he became Prime Minister was fascinating and controversial at times, but fascinating also.
So that would be an interesting dinner party, I guess. And then I guess the final one, and it's a bit of a reference to tennis, would be Rafa Nadal, obviously fantastic, possibly the greatest of all time, but you know, real warrior on the court. But I know from my involvement in the tennis world that he's a, you know, really good guy off it, one of the nicest people you could meet. So just trying to pick his brains on how he switches it on
for the court,
and then, you know, can be super chill off it. So so those would be my three guests for dinner.
So they always say never to beat your heroes, but I guess when somebody is that nice like Rafa, then it's certainly a pleasure. But
Yeah. I also noticed you went for a tennis player, not a golfer. That's excellent. Well, no, I think they'll be fascinating guests. So, we've got I think we're racking up the guests we've got for the Deepridge dinner party now. So at some point we'll have to go back through it and actually work out, you know, who's who, because there's some fascinating people there. So. Yeah. So, Simon, thank you very much for your time. Really enjoyed that. So, very much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you for joining us. If you have any subjects you'd like us to discuss in future podcasts, please email us at discovery@deepridgecapital.com. This podcast was brought to you by Deepridge Capital LLP. Deepridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.